Good morning and welcome to Eye on the Community. I am your host, Yava Sellers. For today's show, got a great young man. He's coming in to talk about some things that he wants to make happen in the city of Columbus. And he's also going to be running for Columbus City Council this year. His name is Kiwan Lawson, former track star Marion Franklin, right?
Correct.
Good deal, man. Marion Good
Franklin,
to have you,
2003
man.
Red Devil.
Glad to have you here today, man. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Really good, man. So for those who don't know in the city of Columbus, tell us about your background, you know, where you grew up. We know you went to Marion Franklin, but where you grew up and kind of what got you to this point you are at today.
Definitely. Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on.
Definitely, man. Thanks for coming.
It's a pleasure, and it's a real blessed opportunity to speak with you today.
Definitely, man.
So, about me, from Columbus, Ohio, born and raised, bounced around between the east side and the south side a little bit. So, some of you may know me from the Shady Lane, Sherwood days. Mm-hmm. Other may know me from Yorktown days. And of course, if you were down south, Marion Franklin, Southfield area, 2003, you know, home of the Red Devils. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's my front. So
definitely,
front.
Man. What did you run in high school?
Oh man, they had me running everything. 4x1, 200, 4x4, and then of course, specializing in long jump.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of college, man, where'd you go to school at?
IU. Okay. Indiana University. After winning, you know, two state titles and a junior Olympic championship, I was privileged enough for them to offer me a full ride scholarship.
Wow, that's big.
At IU Hoosiers. You know, I'm still a Buckeye at heart, but you know, Hoosiers. You know, that's my school.
Good
you know,
deal,
I gotta
man.
Represent.
Good deal. So, back in Columbus now.
Yes, yes.
You know, living here in the city of Columbus, and there's been an opportunity for you to run for the candidacy and run for the spot of city council.
Definitely.
So what was it that made you feel like, you know, like that was your calling or your goal in life to do that?
Wow. Well, I've always had an interest in our urban education system.
Okay.
Particularly in Columbus Public Schools. In 12th grade, I have the opportunity of working with Dr. Jean Harris for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether, you know, you like her, indifferent about her or not, she was one of the main reasons why I took an interest in our education system, because she had an open door policy for us as ambassadors, if you will, to meet people like her and Stephanie Hightower and, of course, Mayor Michael Coleman. And being in that arena, the privilege arena, I knew that one day I wanted to be there to be able to affect change because, you know, our school district, I mean, we've seen some troubles along the way, but we've had successful people, whether it's academically successful or athletically successful. And I wanted to be the one to bring that back as a form of wealth. And so upon going to college, IU, I majored in the humanities, the sociology and gender studies.
Okay.
And I got my undergrad there. Of course, in the midst of running track, a couple Big Ten titles, you know. But I always wanted to come back. And so, you know, I had an opportunity to go to grad school, and I've done some work down in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Wow.
I came in 5 years and 6 years after the devastation, and again, I came across the same issues: public policy, education. Socioeconomic status and dealing with the social issues in the city. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, Katrina can happen really anywhere.
Right.
And it's just the storm that took off that veil of what was going on in New Orleans. And when I came back here, traveling back and forth from Bloomington to Indianapolis to here, I started to see, in a sense, similar things. Hamilton Road, East Lamar area is kind of drying up.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it was the Bryce Road area that took off for a while, and now it's kind of drying up. And up north, you know, we lost North Lamar. We lost City Center.
Right.
And so, you know, I was amazed, like, wow, you know, this is my city. You know, I felt like I owed a debt because of the amazing staff of Marion Franklin, what they were able to do for me. I felt compelled to do the same for my city.
So when you're talking about, you know, because one thing you're going into now is community revitalization.
Yes.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about that and about reinvesting in your community and that kind of stuff, the curb appeal feel.
Yes.
So in terms of your platform and kind of what you want to talk about, if I was to ask you about community revitalization, you know, what would be your stance on those kind of things? What would you want to see changed?
Oh, well, again, being a researcher at heart, I want to reach out to the community. I want to see what they have to say about their area. I don't live in a Mount Vernon area, so I don't know what
needs are really there for people who are there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the same thing goes for, the south end of town and the east side of town, and just really have a real conversation. And I think that's where the break is in terms of our elected representatives and the actual public or our citizenry. There's a break in dialogue and communication. And what we do see is, you know, our downtown is coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think Mayor Michael Coleman has done a wonderful job in terms of attracting new businesses and you know, bringing jobs here. But, you know, I don't really think that the people really understand, you know, the nature of having a newly built, if you will, downtown when they look across the street and things are still messed up you know, sidewalks and, you know, streets need to be repaved. So I want to really have that conversation to see, an open conversation to see what exactly their needs are and then assess what we can do to change their scenery or change their situation as best as possible.
Yeah, very, very important. It seems that, you know, looking over some of the things that I was sent with your notes and everything, let's look at the issues of farmstead areas. Mm-hmm. And one thing that made me think about was food deserts. And, you know, a lot of neighborhoods, they don't have access to healthy foods. You got corner stores, but there's no really healthy foods there. And so a lot of our kids are just getting junk food, you know, the chips, the candy, those kind of things, because there may not be transportation to a grocery store, or their family may not have access to a larger grocery store. Let's talk a little bit about that a little bit.
Right. Well, one of my ideas, I remember growing up as a kid, we had what they call a farmer's market, whether it was downtown, whether it was in a community center. We had farmer's markets around, and it served two purposes. One, to, of course, provide healthy foods that are grown right here in Central Columbus, Ohio, and, you know, at an affordable price. Mm-hmm. And they're in areas where people can either walk or it was a light commute there. Now, I know that there is some that's kind of here and there, but I think that we should have something that's on a consistent basis where we know that every, you know, Tuesday or Thursday or every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we're going to have a farmer's market. And I think that will help drive the economy as well. Mm-hmm. Getting the money to circulate within the community, I think that's really big. You know, allowing, you know, people to touch the money.
Economic inclusion.
Right. You know, 15, 20 times before it goes out. And ultimately, just try to involve, you know, everyone, you know, not just the inner city folks, not just the farmers, but everyone, so we can collaborate to make the city better.
That's always good. In terms of hearing from the people, you know, and I think a lot of people talk about this when they're either about to be elected or trying to get elected. They say, you know, I want to hear from the people and know what the people want.
Yes.
You know, what would be your case of action in terms of hearing from people about what they want to see happen in their communities?
Right. Well, I think it comes down to a point of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, I'm from Columbus. I've been away for, you know, a little while, but, you know, had to get educated and come back. So I think if people understand that and understand that I'm a genuine person, I think we can have a genuine conversation.
Definitely.
If you look at my background, I've worked with sexual minorities in terms of the GLBTQ community, you know, working with my mentor, Dr. Marlon Bailey. He received a grant from University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. And that was about a $50,000 or $60,000 grant. And we were able to work with communities in Indianapolis and Detroit in terms of HIV AIDS prevalence within urban communities. And so I was able to sit down and have a conversation with people whose sexuality was different than mine, but have a real conversation about what their problems are. And again, down in New Orleans, rather, dealing with Katrina, I mean, it was hard for people to talk about their experience after basically losing everything, you know, everything. To sit down and have a real conversation about that process and, you know, government actions and inactions and how that affects. So having that skill set and having that knowledge, bringing it back here to Columbus, I think that I'll be able to engage people and to actually inform people. There's a lot of misinformation out there about, you know, what the mayor can and can't do. I mean, even with the presidency, you know, President Obama is responsible for what's going on Coble and Livingston, right? And we have to realize that, one, in order for this conversation to happen, we have to engage our public, let them know that they have to take part in voting.
Yes,
that's what it comes down to. We have to vote in our interest. Now, I'm not here to express what party or whatever, but you have to vote in your interest and understand that the local leaders, the, you know, the city council, your school board, you know, your mayoral position, all those positions have a direct material effect on what goes on here in Columbus.
Exactly.
Not President Obama, you know, in Kasich in some ways, Governor Kasich in some ways, but your local leaders have a hands-on. And once that's known and we start pushing forth those agendas, I think we all can have a better conversation.
So when you start, you know, getting to that conversation, then you're talking about accountability.
Yes.
And, you know, we had a chance to do an actual community forum here at Radio One, where we brought in people from the community to talk about violence and what's going on in the city.
Yes.
And one thing that was brought to our attention is that, hey, you know, you can take part in neighborhood watches. Let's talk about the accountability that comes with that.
Accountability. Being in the South, my dad is from Mann, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. If you don't know where that's at, look up Charleston and find like a little spot between Logan and Kistler is Mann. It's like a town of 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it's a very tight-knit community. Everyone knows everyone up and down the street. Even the sheriff who comes up and down the street. So mm-hmm. you know that that's somebody's child. You know, that's somebody's mom or somebody's dad.
Yeah.
It's not just a somebody. And they take responsibility for what goes on in their area. I mean, if a car comes in with out-of-town plates, you best believe somebody's making a phone call and say, you know, who was that or who was.
Right.
So they own their area, right? And so my point is that we have to strip down these neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
these hoods, strip them down, and let's build communities. Let's know people. Let's take responsibility. I believe President Barack Obama has said, you know, in a paraphrased way, you know, my education is no more richer than the kid who's failing, you know, in school. You know, that's, you know, my life is no more healthier than the elderly who is seeking health care every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of accountability that I'm referring to,
yeah.
where we take stock, you know, watch out for our neighborhoods, you know, watch out for our children and, you know, try to help guide, try to help lead, because it does take a village. It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to help a family. And if we can all pour together our resources and our sources of knowledge and our education background, I think that we will be better served instead of turning a blind eye to, you know, something that's happening because we have this no snitching policy.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's tearing us apart. No one wants to take responsibility. No one wants to be held accountable. And by virtue, we're allowing that same violence that we see on another person to happen on our very person. Yeah.
Now, for those who are just now tuning in, I'm speaking with Brother Kiwan Lawson. He's going to be running for Columbus City Council. And if you want to, you know, email him questions or talk to him, you can go to kiwanforcitycouncil@gmail.com. That's K-I-W-A-N for citycouncil@gmail.com. So, you know, you talked about public education.
Yes.
And how important it was to you. Let's discuss some public education reform.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, your ideals, what are some things that you would change, that you would kind of implement if you were elected to city council?
Right. Now, we have to understand that we have school board, which, of course, Dr. Dan Good is the superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the school board. Then we have city council. And there has to be some sort of break between what we can and cannot do with city council.
Right.
So for those, you know, who may or may not know, we have influence, but we don't have the final say. That's what the school board is elected for. But I believe that our presence alone, as being educated people, you know, within council,
mm-hmm.
We have a few younger people who are in council as well.
Yeah.
We can set a new standard of what it means to be educated and how serious, you know, it is to be educated in that way. And so our mere presence alone can provide tutoring, can provide mentorship. You know, hopefully it can gain the attention of students, college students,
mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, at the Ohio State University, Ohio Dominican, Capital University, Columbus State, and, you know, Franklin, on and on, to set up some sort of mentorship, not just within one school or a few schools, but across our district,
yeah.
To help our kids succeed. Because if they're not succeeding in the classroom and their communities are not providing that support to get them to believe that they can become something, then their failing test scores or their lack of test scores is only going to make sense of why they can't succeed.
Yeah.
You know, you have people telling you you can't succeed, and then your test scores supports that notion. We have to change that dynamic. We have a lot of talented individuals here in the city,
yeah.
a lot of smart, bright kids, and we have to continue to keep them motivated and keep them on a path where they're pursuing education, not that they have to work, not that they should, you know, be providing for the household, but keep them in a mindset of a kid and continue to nourish their you know, their thirst or their curiosity for education.
Yeah, so when you talk about, you know, education and being in the classroom, in terms of block scheduling, one thing I noticed is that you wanted to make those periods longer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's discuss that a little bit.
Okay, so again, Mary Franklin High School, we had block scheduling, which means that we had you know, our what do you call it, homeroom.
Mm-hmm.
Homeroom and first block were basically the same.
Okay.
We were in that class for about an hour and 15 minutes, and then we would move on to our second class, another hour and 15 minutes. Then we had our lunch, and then we had, of course, our third block, and then our fourth block, and then the school day will be over.
Yeah.
That gave us access to our teacher for that hour, a little over an hour's time, and where we can sit down, we can get into the material, we can ask questions, we can go over homework. And to me, my own experience, it better prepared me for college, because okay. college classes are around an hour, 15
yeah,
minutes.
Similar.
So when we had periods, because I remember having periods around, like, you know, elementary, middle school, we had like 45 minute classes. So think about it like this, people. You know, the bell rings. You get, you know, you have 5 or 6 minutes to switch classes. You get settled in the class. Teacher, you know, takes attendance. That's about, what, a 5-10 minute process,
mm-hmm.
you know, 5-6 minutes. So that's 5 or 6 minutes gone. So 45 minutes is cut down to, what, like, you know, 30, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
You get into the material. You read a few pages or to go over the homework before, however we do it. And then now you look up and we have 10 minutes left in class.
Yeah.
You have questions that you need to answer. And the teacher is not able to answer those questions because of a time restraint.
Time allotted, yeah.
Then on top of that, we have 9 periods. Mm. So this is not happening just in one class. This is happening across 9 classes.
Right.
You know, is that really where we want to be, 45 minutes a class?
Mm-hmm.
At least from my knowledge now. To me, that doesn't serve our young ones well.
Right.
You know, education takes time. It's a skill. You have to learn how to take notes, learn how to read, learn how to write, learn how to articulate, you know, what you've learned from, you know, the readings or your assignment or whatever you had the night before.
Yeah. So, you know, right now with education, one of the biggest movements or issues that we're discussing is the mm-hmm. dropout rates.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you look at those, especially for young black males, you know, they seem to be staggering. Have you kind of looked into that and kind of begin to put together or map out a plan to help address those issues?
I've looked into the dropout rate issue, and whether you believe the statistics as to what's going on or not,
mm-hmm.
I just think that we should just take a stand and say, look, you know, we're not going to allow you to drop out.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to graduate, and that should be our stance. And that should be a part of a culture that we can help create,
yeah.
you know, as city council members. You know, just, again, goes back to accountability. We see how all these things are linked, right? And really, again, finding out what works well with the student. Because if the cards are stacked up against you and you don't have the wherewithal to seek out counseling, to seek out tutoring, to seek out mentorship, or you know, let's be frank here. You know, a lot of parents, you know, haven't graduated high school yeah. either. So
it's hard for them to help you with your work if they don't get the
exactly,
and stuff. Yeah.
exactly. And so, you know, we should have some sort of accountability where we're not allowing kids to drop out either by a certain age group or, you know, whatever the however we can, you know, come to an agreement mm-hmm. on that. And, you know, and I know that we're getting to different ways of teaching now.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, just always make sure that we're addressing the needs of the student, because some students may be artistically inclined. And if that art project or that art class or that theater class mm-hmm. is stripped, maybe that was their outlet. Maybe yeah. basketball isn't their thing. Maybe football isn't their thing.
Right.
you know, maybe track and field wasn't your thing. So we should be able to continue to involve our community, engage our community, and engage faith-based, you know, religious groups, and just to try to make sense of it all and try to pull together.
Yeah, that definitely brings us to kind of our next point. Because a lot of people talk about education, but it's also important that, you know, families have the economic resources they need. Mm-hmm. Because once you leave school, you may go to a home that doesn't have food. It doesn't have maybe running water. You
exactly.
know, lights may be off. So you got all these other issues you got to deal with once you finally get home. So when we talk about continuing to grow economically, let's discuss your stance on that a little bit.
Ooh, okay. Now this is going to raise some eyebrows, but, and you know, and again, you know, we can have this conversation. This is not about me imposing my will and counsel or anything like that. But I think we should take a stance on raising the minimum wage
mm-hmm.
a little bit. I know every, you know, we're going to, I think it already happened for this year. It's around like 8:15.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, let's just go ahead and make it $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. You know, gas prices are now coming down, but, you know, previous years, you know, they were crazy, you know, like you're talking about like close to $4 a gallon in some cases.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And, you know, cost of bread is going up. The cost of, you know, butter, the essential things are just going up. And, you know, I think back to, you know, my own grandparents, and they're retired now, but, you know, their paychecks are not going up,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the more things cost, the more it's taken away from their resources.
Yeah.
And so my opinion is, you know, let's go ahead and raise minimum wage to $10 an hour. And then, you know, if you're, you know, waitressing behind, you know, tables or, you know, local bars, taverns, restaurants, you know, let's get them up to about $5.15 an hour. And because if the more money people make, and I know I'm gonna get, you know, some resistance against this, but the more money people make, the more they can take stock and be a part of consumption.
Very true.
Because here's the thing. And I worked for Best Buy when I was in college, mm-hmm. you know, in between a few injuries. You know, for a while, like something as simple as not being able to buy the TV that you turn on every day, not being able to buy that game console. And it sounds very materialistic, but, you know, here's the thing. Like, people want to, you know, they buy things, you know, and it helps them feel good about themselves in a way.
Right.
It's like an accomplishment. You save up. But when you're making, you know, $7 an hour, or it was like $6-something an hour or whatever back then, It was hard to turn on that TV, or, you know, working for Sprint, you know, turn on that cell phone that you couldn't afford. And so I look at it in that way. Like, you know, the person who's working at Walmart, you know, if they're not to call Walmart out or any entity out, but anyone working at any chain and they struggling in their struggle to buy produce or to keep the family afloat, there is something fundamentally wrong with that picture. I mean, come on, like, we know that a lot of these industries, they have the wealth and the establishment to pay their employees more.
Right.
To provide health care, to provide knowledge about their health care plan, what's covered and what's not, and be able to engage them so they know where to go.
Yeah.
They know how to, you know, use it. And, you know, to have low premiums and low deductibles. I think that's something that we can all really benefit from. And the healthier we are, the more access to healthier foods that we have, the more that we can partake in, you know, in being productive citizens. I think if that's the goal, then why make it harder for people to succeed?
So when you're discussing things like, you know, investing into small businesses here in the city of Columbus, you know, we call them moms and pop shops.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them don't understand and are you know, aware of the SBA loans that they can get.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the route of educating those?
Again, in these community discussion forums, I think that, you know, different committees that we serve, that we will serve on council, I think that we should have, first, we need to let it be known that, you know, council meetings are held this day at this time. So it'll be open to the public, because they are open to the public.
Right.
And being able to just provide information about where they can go to get the loans. Because, you know, again, going back to Marion Franklin, 2003, Parsons Merchants Association, you know, they sponsored me with the scholarship. I couldn't take it, of course, because of Indiana scholarship they afforded me. But but they gave me a scholarship. I think Crane Plastics, and these start off at, you know, mom and pop kind of stores or small business in the Merchants Association to band together to provide funding. If we don't keep these industries alive. You know, that those are the scholarships that are leaving our schools.
Right.
Those are the future businesses that could employ our people, like mm-hmm. Buckeye Steel, for example, in the yeah. south end of town, Georgia Pacific, on down the line. Like, these companies are a part of the fabric of the south end of town. And again, and they have that responsibility where, of course, they're doing well and they find a way to give back. But if we don't invest into these stores or invest into our communities, they're going to find places to go, other places to go. I think Crane Plaza's ended up moving mm-hmm. not too long ago. And so, you know, and that's, you know, and that's the problem. Like, no one wants to move into a dirty house, right?
Right.
Come in and the carpet tore up, the dog went everywhere, and you know, you turn key like, I'm not moving in here. They want to see that, okay, the carpet may need replaced, but the walls are there, mm-hmm. the house is clean, it mm-hmm. smells nice. So in a business mind, that's how I would look at these neighborhoods. Like, if we can clean them up mm-hmm. and everybody take part of that, then we can keep these industries that are there and hopefully attract new businesses as they're doing with the downtown area.
Very true.
Yeah.
Now, as we kind of come to a close, you know, for those who do not know you, again, I want you to tell the people who you are, you know, what you're doing, and, you know, why they should be looking to support you.
Well, again, my name is Kewan Lawson, mm-hmm. Running for Columbus City Council. I am from Columbus. I've always been invested in Columbus, whether working with, you know, local artists, whether working with just people within the community, or be able to just have a conversation with our young ones. I mean, I've come back and forth to Mayor Franklin several times, and the whole administration has changed now when I was there. But when I was there, you know, it was good to see that, you know, our teachers were still, you know, involved in these kids' lives and providing an outlet. And so I bring back that authenticity. I bring to the table experience. I bring to the table a wealth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And something that really sets me apart, I believe, is just my overall enthusiasm. As my frat brothers will say, mm-hmm. Enthusiasm is a catalyst of all change. And without great enthusiasm, nothing great really could really happen or can manifest itself.
That's good.
And so, you know, and overall, I just care. I mean, it's exhausting to see, you know, some areas look the way they look, or to see our people, you know, out of jobs, you know, out of a house or home, or, you know, living in, you know, areas that have been marginalized, mm-hmm. they're disadvantaged, maybe they're off the system in terms of transportation, and also dealing with this incarceration thing. And mm-hmm. that's another topic. Man, we got to come back to that,
yeah,
man.
Definitely.
You know, and dealing with a way to deal with the incarceration rate among our youth in the violence and the crime. You know, band of box issues, nonviolent felonies. You know, we have to do something about that, because you don't have to be incarcerated to be incarcerated. You know, that felony is an incarceration in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Can't get jobs.
Right.
Can't work with kids, on down the line. So, you know, that's what I'm about. And again, I'll be willing to sit down and speak with anyone. You know, Mayor Coleman, if you're listening, I would love to sit and talk with you. Mm-hmm. You know, President Ginther, or anybody on council. You know, I think it's time that, you know, we start paying attention to our city and to do what the people elected us to do, and that's to serve our communities.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for coming in, man. I wish
you
the best of luck
me.
In
Thank
your
you.
Endeavor. You know,
thank you.
Definitely enjoyed talking with you and getting a chance to kind of, you know, hear your thoughts and hear what you think needs to happen in the city of Columbus. So if y'all want to support him, make sure you do that. Kewan Lawson. Again, you can email him at kewanforcitycouncil@gmail.com. kewanforcitycouncil@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Any other thing you want to tell the people?
You can also find me on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, search Kewan, that's Kiwan,
mm-hmm.
R as in Randy, Lawson, Lawson. Find me on Facebook, reach out, connect. Fan page coming soon. I've been out here in the community, so I've been off of social media a little while, but, you know, you can find out, you know, what's going on, you know, website and all that's coming soon too, so. We're just working.
Definitely,
that's what we're
man.
Doing. We're
well,
working.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You're tuned in to I'm the Community. I'm your host, Yava Sellers. Remember to keep God first. With God, all things are possible. All is all. That's all it all means. Join us again here next Sunday on I'm the Community.